Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Killed by Punk. I'm one of your hosts, Damien Abraham, and your other host, as always, is my friend and your friend too, Chris Estrada. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. I'm excited to do this.
I'm excited too.
It's been a while since our first episode came out a while ago. We're a little busy though. You know, you got touring, then I got stand up and other shit going on, but I'm excited that we're committing to doing more episodes more often. And I was really excited by the feedback from the first one.
Same. And I think we started out real hot with that first one. I think that was the real great way to kind of bring this show out to the world. And the reality is, every time you and me get on the phone, we end up recording a podcast that we don't record. So we've actually probably done a couple other episodes in between worth of Killed by Punk.
We chop it up. We chop it up. I'm just like, I need to talk to Damien, because if not, I'm going to end up talking to my girlfriend about this and she doesn't care.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very grateful for these opportunities because my family is so fucking sick of Punk. Like, they just so don't want to hear about any of this shit. Exciting it is, they are not up for it unless it's Nirvana related with my younger two. But I'm worried I'm driving my wife out of Punk because she definitely like does not want to hear any more shit.
Do you ever find yourself listen? Do you ever find yourself getting tired? Like, are you ever just like, I mean, you know, you play in a hardcore band, you have this podcast, but you also have Turn Out of Punk. Do you ever find yourself being like, yo, I just want to listen to like a jazz record tonight?
I think like I do listen to other stuff.
Yeah.
But I find punk is broad enough that if I get sick of listening to GBH, there's Gorilla Biscuits. And if I get sick of Gorilla Biscuits, there's Bad Brains. If I get sick of Bad Brains, I could listen to Los Crudos. If I get, you know, there's just like so many Bikini Kill, like it just goes on and on, the bands and the subgenres, right? And like, I feel if it was one, like if we were talking about a podcast like Killed by Epiphat or Killed by Ska Punk at one little sector, it might be hard to kind of maintain this level of enthusiasm for this thing. But I get way more bored of the music I make than other people's music.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you know, it's so fun. But I've always kind of been like this. Like, sometimes I'll be like, after listening to a shitload of punk records in a row, I'll be like, man, let me put on a hip hop record, or sometimes I'll even put on like, oh, let me listen to some Black Sabbath or whatever, you know, like just like switch it up or whatever. But I still keep going back to this fucking virus that is punk. Like, I keep going back. I mean, it's one of those things where I keep going back because everything about it kind of excites me. It's from like the imagery, you know, like just the culture behind it, the stories behind it, the artwork behind it. So it's kind of funny because like, that's what I keep going back to. That it's not even just the music. It's like so much more that like, that brings me back to it, whether it's like the ethos or the fucking politics or the gossip or the fucking, you know, there's always something that brings me back to it. Like, not that I ever stray too far. I mean, I'm always just, I'll probably put on a hip hop record or like a, I don't know, even like a Mexican, like Mexican music or something, but I come back. I can't not come back.
I feel the same way. I feel like it's such a, there's that some ideas are poisonous comp that chemical.
I love that comp. Yep.
Love that comp.
If you listen records comp, I love that line, the booklet in there.
Exactly. And there's that essay he has at the beginning about trying to not be straight edge at a certain point and going to college and trying to fit in and drinking and how this has just kind of fucked up his life because it changed the way he looked at the world and just feeling so dishonest when he was trying to do that. It's been a long time since I read it, so I'm probably misparaphrasing, but I feel like that can be applied to punk in general where it's such a, and I, people get weird when I say this, but it is like the real red pill where after you take it, graphics, images, film, fashion, all this stuff, you kind of see in a different way because you see it through this prism afterwards.
Yeah, you see, you absolutely, you see it through a prism of like, when you, you start looking at fashion and all this other shit, and you can see the inklings of it. You could see like the tentacles of it and being like, yo, that's from that, you know? Or like,
And
yeah.
it's weird because maybe this speaks to my own insecurities more than it actually speaks to any sort of real tangible quality to it or something, but I find, and this definitely speaks to you, and I've talked about this with you, anything that happens in culture, if I can relate, if I relate to it, overwhelmingly it turns out that there's a connection to punk rock, I
Yeah.
find. In
Yep.
and
True
it's
that.
just it
True
breeds it
that.
bleeds through.
Yeah, true that. It does. You're absolutely right. There's a lot of it that like you can kind of sniff out or you get a sense of, and like, you know, I'm sometimes with certain things like I kind of see it a lot in like advertising and other music forms, but I even with films, not so much all films, but there, you know, sometimes you can kind of pick up on it, but there's like, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you see its webs everywhere, you know?
I think it's weird too because it's almost like supernatural, you know. That's definitely what I'm saying. But there's almost like a supernatural quality to this thing. The fact that it is this place where, as a young person, you kind of just come and do whatever the fuck you want and make your own stuff, and it's valid. So if you're a creative person, or you're gonna come to this thing, and it's gonna be like a sandbox where you can just kind of make flyers or make
Yeah.
a documentary. We were talking about Ebullition earlier. One of the craziest
Yeah.
shit is, you know that band His Golden Messenger on Merge, an
Yep.
indie rock band? That dude was in the band Exignata on Ebullition.
Oh, heard you up.
And there's a documentary on YouTube about Exignata made by Jack Johnson.
That's right, you were telling me that. That's
That's
crazy.
so fucking
Yeah.
weird. And like,
To
but
me,
here's, if you want to make a documentary about your friend's band as a filmmaker or as
yeah.
someone, you can do that because
Yeah.
everything you do is valid and there's people that are kind of cheering you on.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Like it just, I also think I probably wouldn't keep coming back to it. And I said, not like I ever stray from it for any reason, but like it's one of those things. I think it's because I found it when I found it. So when you know, finding it at like 13 years old, like that shit starts leaving an impression on you. And then, so it's become part of how my mind got shaped, you know, and how I view things.
100%.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we're having this conversation, and the only thing I think we could substitute in for the word punk in this conversation and still have the same sort of level of jubilation for it is like Jesus or God. We're like talking about religion in the way
Yeah.
that it's had such a profound effect on our lives, and the fact that it's like dictated our culture and
Yeah.
changed the way we view the world, and we always have to view it through
Yeah.
this in prism now, that would be something that's comparable to religion.
Oh,
And
yeah.
it is a polyistic faith with many gods that we all worship. And you and I believe in a lot of the same gods,
A lot
but
of them, my boy.
then there's also some gods that we don't believe in or have different levels of faith with. And I think that's what we
Yeah.
wanted to talk about on this episode is
Yeah. Some of us are on the right side of history, and some of us for years have badgered one of the gods on your podcast, your other podcast,
Well, you know, Chris, I think you're being too hard on yourself
you
about not liking Agnostic
bring
Front.
them just
No, we're
no.
talking about a much larger sacred cow in the worlds of punk rock today. We're talking about potentially two, because
Yeah.
to me, I think both of these bands occupy a similar space in, well, to me personally and to punk. And the band that we were going to start this thing talking about is a band that's very close to your heart, and a band that, as you said, I've had a, at least publicly, a thorny relationship with on this podcast, and that is The Clash.
The Mighty Clash, my boy. The
You got the
Mighty
CD
Clash.
right
I got the
there.
CD. Got great, Marcus Gray's Last Gang in Town right here. Look how thick this motherfucker is.
Oh my God, what a waste of ink.
I reread it to prepare for war. I said for years, For years, I listened to Turn Out a Punk, and I remember one time, no bullshit, years ago, I remember it was at my old lady's apartment, and I did a ugh sound, like in disgust, and then I go, she goes, "What's wrong?" And I was listening to Turn Out a Punk on my headphones, and I go, "This fucking Damien, great band, fucked up is a me," but every fucking podcast, he finds a way to shit on the fucking Clash. He says that they're overrated. He's always asking. He's always going out of his way to let everybody know he's a Sex Pistols guy. Now he's letting everybody know that he's actually more of a Damned guy. And
Yes.
then I just
Yeah.
said, but, and I remember when I got on here, I said, when you hit me up and I did Turn Out a Punk the first time, homie, I was locked and loaded. I said, I'm gonna talk to this fool. And you know what's so funny? You broke it down in such a way. You went, look, I don't know. I just think some of our idols can deal with criticism. Like, that's part of punk. And you know what? You dismantled what the anger I had. I said, you know what? You're right. You're right. Because I also don't agree on like all the kind of idols of like punk, you know?
Yeah,
So,
oh, yeah, absolutely. And I
yeah.
feel
But I
I've
will say you are objectively wrong. Like, you're
yeah.
objectively wrong. You're objectively wrong. And it hurts my heart, my boy, because you could be living such a fucking even more amazing life if you let a little clash into your life.
I do let a little, and when I say a little, I mean that record you held the first one and a little bit on the second one.
Bangers, bangers.
There are some bangers on those records.
I'm gonna tell you this right now, and you know what, I'm getting heated because I remember all this
Go.
shit.
Let's go.
I heard you talk shit about London Calling one time. I forgot who. You might have had one of the guys. Did you ever have one of the guys from Duran Duran on your podcast?
No, but that would be awesome. No, maybe it was with,
I
was
forgot
it
who,
with
but
from the cult, maybe,
maybe it's
or
from the cult, and you were just like, you went out of your way. You were just like, oh, and London Calling, that's not a really good produced album, is it? And you were just like shitting on it. And I go, I was pulling my hair out. I go, what is this fool talking about, dog?
I think with the Clash,
Yeah, hit me. It,
I
what is
feel
it?
it's been an evolving relationship with them. There was
Yeah.
a moment in my life where I just was like, I just dismissed it wholesale. And
Yeah.
I noticed that a lot of the people I was meeting around them that were in these bands that I loved also disliked the Clash. And my favorite moment in this period was we were on tour with the Foo Fighters. I'm not
Yeah.
going to say what member of the Foo Fighters, but there was a certain member of the Foo Fighters that I was like, Clash kind of suck, huh? And they were like, yeah, really overrated. And I'm like,
Yeah.
that's wild. That's amazing that you feel the same way as I do. And then Jonah from, was telling Jonah from Fucked Up this,
Yeah.
and he's like, yeah. And he's like, and he got all fired up and a little drunk. And then he goes up to Chris Shiflett from the Clash backstage, and he's like,
Chris
the Foo Fighters,
Shiflett
not the
from,
Clash. Chris
yeah.
Shiflett from the Foo Fighters, sorry. And no, he's screw a name.
He should be so lucky.
Yeah, and he would definitely think that too, because Jonah's like, don't you fucking hate the Clash? And he turns and looks at Jonah in the eyes, and then slowly rolls up his sleeve, and on his forearm he's got a massive Clash tattoo.
Oh, so
Like,
funny.
it's not shared by everyone. I think it's also, and this is weird because we were talking about this a little bit earlier. I think there's a East Coast, West Coast hardcore, specifically kind of like Northeast versus sort of a California
Yeah.
version of punk, where California is, I find, a lot more on in general, but like supportive and cheering on their friends as they find success. On the East Coast, it's all haters, and anytime someone finds success, it's like, well, let's chop them the fuck down. And it's a little more dogmatic, and I feel like that might be playing into my reason for hating the Clash, is because they found so much success in this thing. But they have songs like there's
But you know
definitely
what?
song.
Look, I get it actually. Like, so when people, you know what's so crazy? When people hate on them, I kind of understand, because if you're growing up, and I learned this, because if you're growing up and you're like 13, 14, and somebody tells you, check out The Clash, one of the best punk bands, and they're a band that they're almost a different band in every album, and you listen to a cut off of Sandinista, you listen to like or you listen to a cut, or you hear Rock the Casbah on fucking the radio, you're gonna be like, yo, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you may like it, or you may like it and say, this is not even, sure, this is fine, but it ain't fucking punk. Or you may hate it and go, yo, this shit is whack. And you may not even be wrong per se, because what's so funny is you've heard that Kurt Cobain story about him and Butch Vig used to argue about Sex Pistols over the Clash.
No, I didn't know this.
Oh yeah. So, and if you ever see Butch Vig again, you should talk to him about it, because I know he did turn out a punk, right?
Really
Yeah.
great episode.
So apparently, when he was producing Nevermind, him and Kurt would get into arguments of who was a better band.
Wow.
And Kurt would always go the would always say the Sex Pistols, and which I understand, because like they sound art damaged in the way that like Nirvana sounds art damaged, you know it. And Butch Vig was always writing the Clash, but I one time read in an old interview, maybe it was in like that Michael Azerrad book, Come As You Are or something, but he said there was a quote from Kurt Cobain was like, yeah, I just didn't know. Like, I heard when everybody was talking to me about punk, I was listening to Black Flag and they said I should listen to The Clash. And I heard Sandinista and I was like, what the fuck is this? And I never returned back to it. But what's so funny is that, you know, there's that famous list of 50 best albums that Kurt Cobain listed as 50 best. He has Combat Rock on there, which is, you wouldn't think that would be the one he would have. You think he'd go back to the first album, or you know what I mean? Like, yeah, but it's so I get it, because they're a band that you can get lost. Like, you don't know where do you fucking start. Also, they're a band that like I have another Clash hater in my life, and I love him. He's my boy Mauricio. He really sweet dude. But every time I post anything Clash related, he messages me and it gets under my fucking skin, because he's always like, what is this fucking dad punk, dad rock bullshit? And like, oh, he calls Joe Strummer Joe Bummer. He is like,
Well,
oh,
it's you bring that up too, and it's funny because I do think it is dad punk in a good way, where
yeah.
my appreciation and understanding and admiration for Joe Strummer has only grown as I've gotten older,
Yeah.
and that's as a person. I remember pre me having kids, a lot of certainly not the turn of the punk stuff, but a lot of my vitriol towards the Clash was really formulated in that kind of era where that Joe Strummer documentary came out, and
The future is unwritten.
he's talking about no great art was ever produced by someone who didn't smoke cigarettes.
Yes, that's
And I
right.
was
Yeah.
straight edge then, and so that
Yeah.
pissed me the fuck off.
Yeah.
And there was.
Can I tell you something that's so
Go on.
fucking funny? Because I remember when he said that, and I've always loved that. Like,
Don't
and
smoke?
it's okay. I used to, I was a two pack a day, I was a pack a day guy.
Oh, damn.
I used to smoke a pack a day, and now I occasionally have a cigarette here and there. But it killed me, because, dog, at that time when I saw that documentary, your boy was smoking like a pack a day. So I was just like, yeah, he's fucking right. So it's so funny to think that you watching it being straight edge, you're just like, he's a fucking idiot. But you know what it is? It goes back to what I love about them, which is what is, in a way, I admit is kind of corny about them, is that they're a very romantic band. There's a lot of romanticism and there's a lot of imagery. Like, they're kind of, to me, a very self-aware band that's like, let's strike a pose and look cool. They're that. So, and a lot of that, like, has, I think, them being one of the first punk bands I got into, and looking at all those photos, looking at those Penni Smith photos that she took of the Clash, and just going through old stuff and finding old photos of them, is it was so funny, because they were kind of like, they look so striking to me. And even though that's probably what I shouldn't give a fuck about punk, I just, at that age, I was like, this is fucking cool. Like, It was as exotic as English people could be for me. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because I'm like, I got the way I got into them, I was like four, maybe 13, 14 at the time. I was 14, freshman year of high school. And there's a kid who was kind of like a gutter punk kid named Eric. This like kid that I grew up, Latino kid. And we all had Walkmans at the time, and he played some Clash for me. And I just remember I was just like, yo, this is fucking great. And what's so funny is that I went to go buy combat rock after that. And I listened to it and I said, oh, this is good, but this is not the same band from the last one. And then they were kind of the first band that I had to do homework for. Cause I was just like, okay, so he gave me this one and I went back and I bought the CD. I bought the first album, which is this album, right? I bought this album and it made sense to me because I was like, all right, cool. This is kind of in line with what I'm listening to now. And like, it was just so weird. Imagine like, I'm barely starting to smoke in high school and I'm like fucking listening to London's Burning and that shit is just romantic. It's exotic. I'm just like, what the fuck is, or listening to I'm So Bored with the USA and listening to White Riot. And but it forced me to do homework. It forced me to investigate in that way that like punk makes you investigate things. Because, in the span of five albums, you couldn't get farther apart. Like they're crazy bookends as a band, And like it is one of those things where like yeah, they were just a band that like even it's so funny when you would bring up that like Sex Pistols Clash thing on the podcast, I would always go as an album, as one album, I'll have to go Nevermind the Bollocks. But as an entity, as a summation of everything, I go with the Clash.
You bring up like a bunch. That's why I'm writing notes actually down on the back of a label design for a fucked up record. I'm writing down notes out of stuff I wanted to get to because you brought up a lot of good points there. And I feel like the Clash established an archetype, which every band that's in punk eventually, that for more than one album, for more than two albums, let's say,
Yeah, absolutely.
eventually hits, which is like, how do you mature in your band that is from something that's at this point probably for yourself like 5 years old. Like, how do you go from being a teenager or someone in your early 20s writing this to becoming someone who's moving more into quote unquote adulthood
Adulthood,
and
yeah.
trying to be part of this thing? And I feel you look at the Clash, the Sex Pistols, the Ramones, and the Damned as being like the big four from that first punk explosion. It's kind of like four very different approaches that you can have to doing this music, where you can put out that one incredible record and then just break up like the Pistols did. You can put out the same, I love all these records, so I'm not saying they're all boring or anything, but you can put out the same style record over and over again like the Ramones did for their whole career. I don't think there's a bad one in that catalog.
There's some bad
Or
ones.
I like there's bad ones, but they're never like,
There,
they're
but they're
not
never.
combat rock bad. They're
Oh,
not Sandinista bad.
oh my God. I'm ready to argue the brilliance of those albums.
But then you can do what the Clash did, or which is just like try and evolve and try and retain your identity as all these outside factors begin pulling you in different directions. And I think that's the thing I appreciate now as an adult looking at the Clash is that internal struggle that must have been going on with this band and the fact that they were becoming so much more creatively open and exposed to new things and taking that all in and having that feed into their music. Or there's a fourth option. You can be like the Damned and evolve your sound and never get bad. So there is a fourth path that one can take.
Some of those damn albums aren't great.
Not a bad one in there. Some of them are different, but like still, we've got our low bar set with Sandinista combat rock.
No, I will argue these albums. I will argue.
We go track by track. We could also, at some point, we got to do this live where we play these records start to finish and an audio commentary after each song.
You're gonna be mad at people having a good time and dancing. You're gonna be like, "What is this? Why don't I understand
Dude, Nero played fiddle while Rome burned. People are
it?"
crazy.
But you
But
know,
go on.
it's funny because you're right. I mean, the thing in that, you know what the thing that's so crazy is that with the Clashes, part of what I like them is part of how imperfect they are. Do you know what I mean? Like how imperfect they are. Like even so, you got this, you got the first album. Bangers on that album. Janie Jones, I'm So Bored with the USA, White Riot, Hate and War. I mean, this is to me like this is one of the punk albums. You know what I mean? Like you got Career Opportunities, you got London's Burning, What's My Name? Yeah, Police and Thieves, kind of the first band to, I mean, really the first band out of those UK bands to start involving reggae into the mix. You know what I mean?
I'll push back on that only just because today I was listening to the first inning of the Hot Rods demo
Yeah.
and they have a dub song on that. So I feel like that was in the air a little bit
That was in
around then.
there. No, you're right, because they were all going to those parties and Don Letts was
Don Letts.
DJing. Yeah, Don Letts was DJing. Like, I mean, for sure. Like, I think if John Lydon had his tape, he would have thrown in a dub song into like Nevermind the Bullocks. You know what I mean? But like, which you later see him get dubby in like Pill, you know?
Totally,
So
100%, yeah.
I think that was really in the air. You know what I mean? But like, I don't even think that Eddie and the Hot Rod song is as definitively a punk take on reggae than Police and Thieves is.
Yeah, I can see that.
Do you know what I mean? It's
Yeah.
sort of a definitive punk take on Junior Mervin's Police and Thieves. Like that's sort of like to me is what I just that album is what I like about that album so much. It's also different. Like I mean, it's and you know what? I'm gonna say this. Your boy end of the century, Johnny Ramone, he says when I heard the Clash, when I heard the Sex Pistols, I wasn't worried. When I heard the Clash, I was worried.
Touche. I will say that I think I have seen footage of Joey Ramone though talking shit on The Cure, and you and me will both agree The Cure are untouchable.
Untouchable.
So
Untouchable.
there is no
Yeah.
accounting for Joey's taste. Rest in peace to one of the greatest vocalists of all time at times. So
Oh, yeah. No, Joey said that. Yes, you're right. Joey, there's a clip on YouTube of Joey talking shit about The Cure. But Johnny is the one that said that, like, when he heard The Clash, he was like, oh, fuck. Like, they're good. He goes, I wasn't worried about the pistols. But because, you know, that first 7-inch they ever put out, that first single, it was White Riot on one side, 1977 on another side. I mean, to me, what's so definitive about them is they have a song called No Elvis. No Elvis. The song's 1977. Have you heard that song?
No Elvis, no Beatles, no Rolling
No Rolling
Stones.
Stones. It's 1977. I mean, that to me, that song gets washed away a little bit because it's a B-side, but it's like such a definitive song for English punk that then influences us like everything. And such a definitive take at that time to say no Elvis, Beatles, or Rolling Stones. You know, like, and then I don't know, it's just something about that band that it just got me. I mean, even that album, like, and even like going on to like Give Them Enough Rope, you know, and which is not as raw as their first album. Sandy Pearlman produced it, who was producing like Blue Oyster Cult at the time. So you have this very like studio sounding record, but it's fucking great.
I like that second record. I think that record is underrated. I feel
Oh,
that is
super
definitely
underrated.
the best, the second
Explosive.
best record. Yeah, second best
Yeah.
record in their catalog for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I grew up hearing "Should I Stay or Should I Go" on the radio here. We had,
Same.
we have like our K Rock here, which is CFNY, and
Yeah.
they at that time had a really good playlist. So that would to me was just kind of mainstream radio. And then Rock the Casbah was played on Much Music here, kind of heavy rotation as a kid. I think my dad even had Combat Rock on CD as an early, like the first CD, one of the first CDs he got.
Man, smart man.
Well, like, yeah, he's
Smart
he left my mom. No, I'm just kidding.
Look,
I'm
no,
just kidding. I
nobody's
love Dad. I love
perfect.
you, Dad. He's gonna hear this and it's gonna be fucking brutal next time I run and talk to him about it. No, I love you, Dad, very much. But he but then I saw, because I got into it when that moment happened where they're showing all those punk rock documentaries and retrospectives, like that Time Life thing. And they have that footage of that old Tony Wilson And So It Goes, I think, Joe. And they do a Garage Band live and Strummer's down on the ground singing with the kids. And if that moment was all that existed of the Clash in that first record, they would be one of my favorite bands of all time. They would be
You know,
perfect for me.
I totally get that. I actually totally get that. But it's, to me, they're imperfections. Like, it's the fact that, like, that first album didn't get released in the US. They came out here, it got released only as an import, but it was the biggest selling import in the US, in North America, including Canada, my boy.
Well, no, because that's the thing I would be fascinated to find out, and I want to bring this up. That version that was an import that was such a huge smash in America, we had a Canadian, there's a Canadian version where instead of green, it's blue on the
Oh,
sides.
yes.
And there's a, I think there's a different track on the two versions. And so I was wondering, like, in America, what version was kind of coming down there? Because obviously we're so close, it would make sense. But then also, I imagine there's a lot of British records obviously being shipped over to the US at that time, too.
They made, you know, it's so funny. Their second album came out as an official American release first, the Give 'Em Enough Rope one. And then what came out after as was their first album, but the American version of it, which changed some of the tracks. Like it had, what did it have on there? It had Clash City Rockers. It had, you know, it had a few, like a few different songs on there that, and White Man in Hammersmith Palace, and like had a few different songs on there. But that UK, what I think is so interesting is that UK album came out and it was an import only. And that's what really influenced a lot of, like, a lot of punks. Like, you think of, like, a lot of punks got into that album, that import. And then they came out here, they toured, and then they released their set. They kind of got a taste of America and a taste of North America. And, like, they toured Canada into, like, into the US. And you can kind of hear it on the second album a little bit. Like, there's almost like, there's almost like a Bo Diddley feel to it, like, you know, like Bo Diddley sped up, like with hard rock riffs. Like it, that second album was is almost a little glammy and sounds like very Who-like, but like it's just interesting to me because then they put that out, and then they come out, they do that album, they come out, they kind of, and then they do London Calling, which, yeah.
Sucks.
It's insane. I mean, it's insane you said that right now. I mean, it's just crazy. It's crazy. It's
It's like
crazy. It's just like, it's
I still don't like that record. I definitely have, like you're saying, the imperfections of the Clash, and especially being in a band,
yeah.
and being in a band that when you hit those awkward stages beyond your first record, like every, not every punk band, but most punk bands will have, can have one incredible 7-inch in them, and
Yeah.
then less have that one incredible LP in them. And it's fascinating when you look at those three biggest British bands, the Damned, the Clash, and the Pistols, how awkward all of their second records are. And I have love for, well, maybe not the Great Rock and Roll Swindle, but I have love for the other two, you
Yeah.
know, but because, like you're saying, it's that imperfections of them and feeling, especially when you start making broadly termed art, like
Yeah,
we
yeah.
do, and you put yourself out there like we do.
Yeah.
I think your empathy for people that create goes up immensely. And I think it took me a long time to mature on this, but now, yeah, like you're saying, those struggles that the Clash had creatively, And what they put out, I find very fascinating now. And I do look at it and study it in a different way than I did when I would just like dismiss it outright. Like, oh, this doesn't sound like their first record.
But you study it in your brain, not in your heart. That's the problem. Because
Yeah,
it,
because
come on, dog. When this is, I'm gonna make you a playlist, and I've done this before for the Clash haters I allow into my life. I've done this before where I make them a playlist that is comprehensive, that tracks them, that like, oh, dog,
But I've heard every Clash song. Like, I don't feel like a friend of mine came on the podcast and was talking about Frank Zappa, and he's like, I'm gonna make you a play, because I'm like, oh, fuck that stuff. That stuff sucks. And he's like, no, I'm gonna make you a playlist, and you're gonna love it. And I admit that my ignorance towards Frank Zappa, some of the stuff still, I'm like, eh, not for me. But then there was some stuff that I'm like, ah, oh, that's amazing. And I feel like with the Clash, I've heard every single Clash song, and I have different levels of respect and love for all of them. And I think you could have pared down London Calling to an unbelievably great single LP and a killer EP, but as a double record, whoosh.
That's what I
Oh.
love, though. That I mean, then I don't even want to know your thoughts on Sandinista then.
Yeah, no, Clash on Broadway. That
The film Clash on Broadway? I mean,
box set that came out in the 90s,
yeah.
that's like, what, five CDs?
Yeah.
Four CDs? My friend had it, and we're like just trying to get through it. There's it was like watching like a Warhol 24-hour movie or something. It was like
Oh, my God.
it was hard.
You compared it to those awful Warhol movies? Oh my God. You can stop and then you can
You're right.
pause
You're
the
right. I'm gonna take
CD.
I'm gonna take that back. I'll take that back a little bit. Those Warhol movies had artistic valor and merit to them in a way that the commercial records of the Clash
Oh
didn't.
my God, dog. Oh my God.
How's this for a hot take? America ruined the Clash. Like you're saying, there was something so quintessentially British about them, and then they come to America, and it's just like this sort of like tourist core kind of vibe where they're like wearing the I Love New York shirt. And like, I'm a proper American lad, mate.
Oh my. Okay. First of all, you're wrong. Never do that voice again. No, never do that. I think America broadened them, because I think, what's so funny is like you take a band, you think of them in their first album, you think of them writing "I'm So Bored with the USA." Phenomenal song, kind of talking about American imperialism in terms of like entertainment, and then it's like, fuck that, we're kind of our own thing. You know what I mean? But to me, that's what makes them so fucking riveting, is that they come to New York. One, not they come to the US, they come to North America. They're influenced by the sounds out here. I mean, these are guys who were listening to like old rockabilly records. They were listening to old blues records. They were listening to American garage music, They come out here, and then at some point, even before, I mean, they came out here already for London Calling, but when they come out here at Sandinista, they fucking do a rap song called The Magnificent Seven, which is a banger.
Are you hearing what you're saying right now? Like, imagine now, like, Bring Me the Horizon coming to America and doing like a trap rap record. And you're like, dudes, come on, you just got here. Take your shoot offs, at least. come on.
No.
I find that relationship between America and England, especially in terms of specifically punk, where it's like this, cultural football, and it depends on what shape the ball is, depending on which country I guess you're talking about first, is getting kicked back and forth between these two countries, and the way the youth cultures influence and the way that these youth cultures are taking. And I guess it goes back to the Beatles, right? The Beatles taking African American music and R&B and
Little Richard.
Little Richard and interpreting it. But and doing their own thing with it and making whatever the Beatles are, and I guess the Rolling Stones certainly are in this too, and the Who, And then they go to America. You have the British rock explosion, which results in this incredible American garage rock thing, mainly from the Rolling Stones, I guess, where you have what eventually becomes proto-punk kind of coming out of these American garage rock bands like the Seeds, all this unbelievable
Yeah,
stuff,
Sonics, all that.
Sonics, and
Question
Europe.
mark and the Mysterians.
Totally. And then it
Yeah.
evolves into like, and then that stuff, and then you get the glam stuff in England kind of coming out of that, which goes to America and begets the New York Dolls, and which ultimately begets this whole kind of New York thing and the stuff that's happening in Detroit and the stuff that's happening in Cleveland. And then that goes back to England, and that's where the Clash and the Sex Pistols and the Damned are kind of taking that and interpolating that with their own thing. And the Ramones, is, I guess, are coming over at that point too and influencing these guys. And then that's kicked back to America again. And it's just constantly seems like it's going on. And there's a fetishization, I think, that happens between these two countries of youth culture in rock and roll specifically.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about other musics other
Yeah.
than punk, where these things have this sort of parallel kind of effect on each other. And like Clash show up, and of course they're like enamored with hip hop, and they're playing with hardcore bands, even though they did ban the Bad Brains from their show afterwards. They blew them off the stage.
I've seen that crazy video you put out. I've seen I just I've seen that video. I kept my mouth shut. I just said, all right. Hey, maybe he's not wrong, but I will say this. I go at those Bonds gig, as much as like they probably had Bad Brains blow them out the water, they also had they had like Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. They had Curtis Blow open up, like they how crazy is that at that like
It's
at
awesome. It is
yeah
cool. Yeah.
it's also cool to think that like that Bonds gig, that Bonds casino gig in New York, they sold the book, the promoter sold so many tickets for it that they had they agreed to accommodate, what was it, 14 nights in a row or
Yeah.
like seven something like
It's like
seven.
two, because there's some days where there's two shows a day, I think. It's been a while since I've gone through that, but there's like online you can find every opener and every show they listed. And you're right, it is super fucking impressive when you go through that list of openers and their awareness of cool culture in America at that time.
That's what I think is dope. I mean, shit, didn't they have, am I wrong in thinking that probably the Stimulators played
I
one of
don't think
those
this
games?
now I don't think the Stimulators played, but there is definitely maybe Kraut opened
Kraut,
one of them.
yeah, Kraut was a big Clash fan. Like
Yeah.
they were big on the Clash. They opened some of those. I don't know. That's but that's also to me is like what's so funny is like for a band playing in New York. What is probably not a perfect record, which I think when they were doing, maybe probably by the time they were doing Bonds, yeah, for sure by the time they were doing Bonds, they were playing for San, they were playing Sandinista.
Yeah.
Not a perfect record by any means. Far from it. You know, like it's fucking three fucking slabs of vinyl, six sides. Like, you know, it's some of it is
Yep.
horseshit.
They started smoking good weed in America and we're just like, let's just fucking let's just
But you know what? I think I always say their worst album is a lot better than most bands' best album.
Absolutely. Like they
Yeah.
are without a doubt one of the greatest rock and roll bands of
Yeah.
all time. And their failing moments are more than I could ever hope to achieve at my best moments.
Yeah.
That being said, they have to be put in the order of things, which is like not the record's not as good as Nevermind the Bollocks at any point as a whole. And career-wise, the Damned are a more interesting band.
Oh, absolutely not. Come on, dude. Strawberries?
Dude, that record's incredible. That song Ignite, it's like they invented AFI goth punk then
Yeah.
in 82.
Yeah. What a mistake that was, huh?
Like Clash are on stage rapping, like thinking they're fucking Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. And meanwhile,
That.
like, you
Dude,
know, Damned are like ripping it, like writing a ripping fucking record. And like,
that.
that record in the 2000s on Nitro, and rest in
Rave.
peace, all respect to the dead, is better than the Mescaleros records.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
What was that?
The Joe Strummer and the Mescalero, is it
Yeah.
Mescaleros? I like it. I like that damned 2000s record more than those Mescaleros records.
Oh my, you like heart, do you, is your heart beating?
My heart is beating, and it's beating very strongly that I do love and respect Joe Strummer
Oh.
very much. And seeing his last stash of weed at the Punk Museum was
Yeah.
one of the coolest things in that whole place for me.
What about that? What about that awful Phantasmagoria fucking damned album?
I
You
like it.
stand?
I
You
stand
like?
by it. More than Sandinista.
Oh, no way. No fucking
Combat
way.
Rock.
No way. Combat Rock. These. And see, the thing is, I'll even agree that, like, London Calling. You know what's so funny? London Calling, I put it on the other day. Because I just said, oh, I want to listen to something that is amazing. So let me put some, let me put it on,
You couldn't find anything else, so you're like, fine, I guess I'll
Oh,
settle.
I piece of shit. No, I fucking put on London Calling because I just thought, what's one of the greatest albums of all time? I put that on. At no point was I like, let me put Strawberries on. No, nobody's ever debated that. And then I put it on. It was the first time. And I don't know if it's because I had to pee and I was stuck in traffic. It was the first time that I will say I listened to that album and I was like, yo, this is all right. This there's maybe there's like a track or two that could have been off of this, But again, I think it's the summation of all its parts with that album. Again, I think for me, it's looking at that cover, sounding sonically how different that album was from their last two albums. Which their last two albums you can put into the punk canon. You can be like, these are UK punk albums in the way that, like, Nevermind the Bollocks, another the first Buzzcocks albums are like the damn, like you can put it in that canon. But when I heard London Calling, I was like, I mean, just the opening song. I mean, come on, dude. I Live by the River, Nuclear War, fucking London Calling. And then you fucking. They hit you with Brand New Cadillac after that. A fucking ripper, dog. A ripper.
It rips ass. I feel like I'm
Man.
being the biggest dick. I feel like I'm just
Yeah.
like hating on it. And I don't hate as much as I'm coming
Yeah.
off right this second, but I you're right. Like it is a masterpiece in terms of the scope of this thing. And here's this band making this record, like as a third
Yeah.
record coming off a record that was less than well as well received than their first album. So it is like a bold move.
Yeah.
And but it's like now they're kind of like, taking the Elvis vibe with that cover. God, there's so many songs on it.
I
And
know. Isn't it great? Just a
but it's
banger,
like
banger after banger.
by the time this is coming out in 79, there's like some real interesting shit happening in America in terms of punk and in England too. Like, and also I think if this record was produced by like Martin Hannett or
Oh,
had
what
a
a
little
bore. What a fucking, I can't
what do you
imagine.
mean? This is the bore.
A
This thing like,
fucking,
sounds like it was
what's that
produced.
fucking, he's gonna be recording ambience outside, like
That would have
running.
been amazing. It would have been so much more interesting than it is in this current manifestation, which is a little self-indulgent. And I say
Oh.
that I'm the guy in the band Fucked Up, the most overly indulgent band to ever claim punk in
Yeah.
some way.
I know. Let's just say you fools have some Sandinista
Oh
track.
God, yeah. I'm a hypocrite on all this shit. Like
Yeah.
last time
But
you and me spoke on record, I was being made fun of by Fat Mike for having two long
yeah.
songs. So
Yeah. Which I
I
love, by the way. But like what I'm saying is that like I don't know, I just think it's a long album. I will say you're not wrong about that, but I think to me it's the scope of that album. It's the scope of like from the what is it, like London Calling, Brand New Cadillac, to Hateful, Rudy Can't Fail, to listening to Lost in the Supermarket. The Jam wish they could have wrote that song.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's funny though, when you talk to the people that were there at that time, like I mean England when this thing was happening, and the people that were there before it kind of happened. It's amazing how many of them, from like Billy Bragg to Cox Bar, how many of them just didn't like the Clash, didn't like the Pistols, didn't even like the Damned. It was the Jam that got him into it, and seeing the Jam do it and being like, oh, real people playing this music now, and they're playing like real music, because the Jam were obviously all coming from a much more, I think, mod sort of background. So I feel like it was like you and me were talking about this off air with my highly controversial opinion, that I think that this record affected the mainstream and was important to the mainstream much more than it was important to punk at that time.
Yes, because it outgrew it.
Punk outgrew them. That's right. 100% by that
No,
point. Like there was like
I
no
think.
way, there's hardcore. You're right, Chris. You're 100%. I'll give it to
No,
you there.
no, no. They outgrew it.
They outgrew punk.
I think by that record, they
Yeah.
outgrew it. I think by that record, what are they gonna fucking sound like? UK subs? Like, who I love, but what are they gonna fucking, like, by that time, there's like, you know, what is there, like, the second wave, there's like by that time you're getting UK subs, you're getting what, maybe vibrators, you know, you're getting the beginnings of like UK 82, right? Like, I just, where do they go?
Discharge was there going, I guess, by that point too,
Yeah,
and or it's just
Discharge.
about, and yeah, there's like a anti-nowhere league. There's like a heavier edge to stuff too by this point.
Yeah. I think there's a heavier edge. There's a bigger like oi type of sound. I think by that time that UK82 stuff, as great as it is, it's not it it lost a little bit of that. It lost the art damaged, like the art school vibe that like that first generation of like English punks are bringing. And then by what, like, I mean, in New York by that time, I mean the Dead Boys had put out that second album that wasn't fucking great. The Heartbreakers, that, you know, Thunders went solo, you know,
Yeah, you're right. Like it was, but New York also by that point, there's the no wave thing starting to happen.
yeah.
You have that weird in between punk, in between hardcore moment where you have the Stimulators and you have
Yeah.
Bad Brains move to New York City
Yeah.
and around, well, I
Crowd.
guess slightly after that and stuff, and it changes everything, right? Like
Yeah.
it's yeah, it's an interesting moment in punk at that point, because it's just prior to hardcore exploding. 79
Yeah.
is kind of the cutoff, and by 81 everything starts ha happening. 80 even it starts happening. So 79 is a weird period, because it's what's post-punk, like what's going to be the next thing that kind of happens, and everything's starting to bubble up. And you're right, it is a band struggling with like where do we fit in this
Yeah.
world
Yeah,
now.
and I couldn't imagine them releasing another like I couldn't imagine re them releasing another like band another album in the vein of like Give 'Em Enough Rope or like the first album.
Yeah.
Like the first like self-titled album. Like I go, where do you go from there? You're getting outside of England. You're now coming to North America. You're kind of seeing the world. I think they were already kind of worldly guys to begin with. I think you had like, the they do get shit for this, like Strummer, being a diplomat's son. Like, that there is that, like a lot of people go, he was a rich kid or whatever. Sure, okay, I'll take it. But I'm like, oh, he could have been the shitty one.
Yeah, and I think like the rich kid thing, from what I've heard, is a little like sometimes gets overstated versus
I think it gets overstated. I
he was
think he,
privileged to get to travel and stuff,
yeah.
definitely. So,
I think his dad had an upper middle class job.
yeah.
I think he was a guy who was consuming music. I mean, you had Paul Simeon, the bassist, kind of coming at it from more of a reggae point of view, and then you had Mick Jones, who was like, I think he talks about his mom sending all of like sending all these glam and like. And like Detroit records, like MC5 records, back to like the US, back to England, because she was living in the US. And then you got Topper Hedden, who is like, the thing about him is that, like, what's crazy about them is that they weren't like fucking friends to begin with. Only Paul and Mick were really like, I've always heard him say, Joe Strummer said, if we had known each other since we were kids, like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, we'd still be together. But they were kind of like, in the way that like people say that the Pistols were put together by Malcolm McLaren, like there's a little bit of a sense that like they were kind of put together by Bernie Rhodes, who.
It's interesting because there's like when you study that period, when you like start digging into that period, the Sex Pistols, the members of the Clash, the members of the Damned, and Chrissie Hynde are all kind of floating around, and there's different configurations of some of these people playing together.
There's
And
London SS that
yeah,
you're
London
familiar with.
SS, and there was like,
London SS was Brian James of the Damned, Chrissie Hynde of the Pretenders, and Mick Jones.
and then
And
there was
then,
another name for it too, like something Bottoms, I'm forgetting now. It was like some sort of vulgar name too that they were going with around then too for the Damned. And I think that had Captain Sensible in it too,
That's
maybe, and
right.
Brian James. So there was this push to develop a band that could do this sound, and I guess the Sex Pistols are what kind of clicked and took off first, and then Clash shortly thereafter, or the Damned shortly thereafter, and the Clash.
Well, I think it took the Clash. I mean, to that sense, it took the Clash seeing the Sex, but it took Joe
Took
Strummer to
Strummer,
see Strummer to see being in the 101ers, who, I mean, essentially he was in a pub rock band. He was in a Dr. Feelgood type band, which was like the 101ers.
I love
And
that
like,
stuff too. The 101er stuff is I love any that whole label, Chiswick Records,
yeah,
but that
Chiswick is great.
but that stuff I thought was fantastic, that 101er single, and
Yeah,
I think
and
they did.
you can kind of hear that in the first album, in the first Clash album. You can kind of hear that like 101ers kind of barroom strumming, like guitar strumming, where it's like, but I, what's so funny is like, but then I don't know, it's just like after give them enough rope, I just go, where do you go from there? So to me, it's like a progression where I just go, okay, you kind of embrace the world. And then you go, all right, fuck it. We were a UK punk band, and like, what are we gonna do? Keep making the same fucking album? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's almost like John Lydon. That like first Pill album is nothing like Nevermind the Bollocks, but you have an understanding where you go, if those fools had stayed together, this is what he would have made.
It would have been real interesting to see what that second Sex Pistols record ended up sounding like,
I
because
think it would have been like that Pill album. That first Pill.
I think it probably would have too, but then you look at what Steve Jones and Paul Cook were kind of doing
With the
around that time period,
Professionals.
The Professionals, and then they also did a single with this band, the Lightning Raiders.
Yeah, and they
And
played on they played on So Alone,
yeah,
that Johnny Thunders
the
album.
Johnny Thunders record. The
And
Johnny
they're
Thunders record is, you break down who's playing on that record, it's fascinating. Like the Only Ones back him up for half the record.
back him up. He has a song on there with Pete from The Only Ones, right?
Yeah,
Or
I think
is
there's like a bunch. Like I think
the
the
bunch,
only half the record is Pete and the Only Ones guys backing up Johnny. And I
and
think
then
the other
Phil.
half, yeah, the other half's like Paul from Eddie and the Hot Rods, later in The Greatest Band Ever, The Damned. And then like Steve Jones is on there, Paul Cook's on
Hey,
there.
you're not on tour with them anymore.
Believe me,
You're not obligated to say this.
every day was a gift.
Oh my
Like it was
God.
just, oh geez, I get to punish these dudes again. I get to watch them rip through a set. Even their new stuff sounded good. Like they were, his voice never got bad. It never gets bad. And
You're
believe,
right.
he was not like, I'm sure if I had met Joe Strummer, I would
Yeah.
talk about how he walked on water. And because I feel that even having never met him.
And I met him.
You met him?
Yeah, I met him outside of Tower Records for
Whoa.
with so when I was in high school, there was I could have sworn I told you this. So when I was in high school, there
Gee, I
was
don't know
a
if you did tell me this on the
yeah
podcast.
this is how mature your boy was. Even in high school, I fuck with those Mescalero albums because I got it, you know. I understood it. I wasn't
Like the
like, oh
disease, you mean
yeah.
when you say got it?
I just get it. I understood it. It can't all be start today, you know. It can't all be New York hardcore. I got it, you know. I guess there was a more sophistication that I had going on at that time than,
Yeah.
you know. I guess my knuckles weren't dragging, being like, oh, what new Agnostic Front record is out, you know?
Yeah.
And
You're listening to NPR. You like world music. You're like, I
your boy was sophisticated.
wanna. Yeah, definitely.
But when that Mescalero's album came out, the first one, the X-Ray style one, he did a signing, or was it for Globo or Go-Go? They did a signing, and I went to it at the old Tower Records and on the Sunset Strip, which is now a liquor store. But I hung out there, and he came out to like meet some of the people in line and was just like kind of talking to everyone. And then also I had another encounter with them when right before he passed, I went to go to this festival out here called the Hootenanny Festival, which was kind of like a rockabilly roots festival. And like I kind of just went because like they had the Chuck Berry was playing, I think X was playing, but Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros were playing there, and I was yelling out for Janie Jones, and I don't think by any chance he was like, I'm gonna give it to this kid. I think it was next on the list, and he pointed at me and gave me one of these, and then went into Janie Jones.
Damn.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so.
he seems like he would have been like an amazing person and someone who wore this whole success in
Yeah.
punk thing really well.
Well, I also, you know what's so funny is I think what I loved about it too is also just the idea of like, even much later on, like by the time he was making those Mescalero records at the tail end of his life, he wasn't kind of like these grumpy old dudes like, I can't believe you're still talking to me about punk. Like he was like, yeah, let's talk about, I think he even at that, you know, before he passed, he was still going like from that documentary. There's that take of him going, how do you want them to present you? And then they say, write punk warlord. Make sure warlord is one word. Like, I just think that's like, there's just something about that. Well, it's so funny because those Mescalero fucking records aren't fucking punk by any means. I mean, they're like world rock records. Like, or they're folky, you know. It's the songwriting. I just think, I don't think there's, I'm going to say this, Dave Vanium, Captain Sensible, Lydon, Cook. I don't think they could write half a good a song as Strummer and Mick Jones wrote.
I'll make you a playlist too. But I think that you're right on. He was a lifer, Joe Strummer,
Yeah, I
and
think it was.
in a way that John Lydon wasn't, in the way that maybe Dave Vanian, I think he was, but Captain Sensible definitely was a lifer in this thing and
Yeah.
involved in different places in this and pops up in weird things and stuff. So I
Yeah.
feel like Joe definitely is this, and I think we've gone enough on the Clash that we don't even need to break into our other topic that you and me were kind of wrestling with throwing the other band into this one episode too with Fugazi. But I look at Joe Strummer and Ian MacKaye as very much the same sort of type of figure in punk rock, which is someone that has shown a path to age within this thing without ever, and I'm shocked that I'm saying this, but without ever truly coming off corny.
Yeah.
Like with always being real and authentic, and like
Yeah.
I never heard what you heard in the Mescaleros records, but I can't dismiss it as being anything but like a mature statement by someone who spent their life in this music and making honest records. They were like, they never came off as like the Sex Pistols live cash-in record for their reunion. They always came off as like, this is real and this is what I'm
It
into.
also it's also kind of funny too, because you almost think of like in terms of like even in terms of thinking of like Fugazi, it's like kind of like even when you've heard them talk to Ian, like, would you ever get Minor Threat back together? And he's like, you don't want to fucking hear me hear those. You shouldn't want to see me sing those songs. Like, there's that growing up with it that I think is always really interesting, you
I
know?
will say that I think Joe Strummer was more at peace with his legacy than I feel Ian MacKaye is. And I'm putting this on Ian, but he's never going to come on this fucking podcast, so why not theorize about him? And I don't mean this podcast. He's probably more likely to come on Killed by Punk than he is Turned Out of Punk.
He's never done Turnout.
No, I don't think he ever will. He's on a list of people that I don't think ever will do the podcast. And maybe it's because I've talked so much shit about stuff, but I feel. That's what I like. We were talking about at the very start of this thing. I feel punk is a place where we can discuss our heroes and cast aspersions at our heroes because it's coming from a place of deep, deep admiration. And
I feel you. I mean, I feel like in the same way that like, you know, like in the same way that those that they in 1977, that song I'm telling you that said like no Elvis Beatles are rock and or no Elvis Beatles are Rolling Stones is they were saying that, but they were also listening to Elvis Beatles and the Rolling Stones. You know what I mean? Like
And it's like, to me, it's like rebelling against these bands and talking shit on Fugazi and The Clash and all this stuff to me. It's kind of like rebelling against your parents,
I guess I've
where
just always loved my parents and the bands.
I've loved my parents way more than I love these bands. But they also, like, how much shit can I talk on them when they're the people that made me who I am? Like, without the Clash, this wouldn't be what it is, and certainly this, by the same token, without Fugazi, this wouldn't be what it is now. And these things had real positive impacts on everything. And
But sonically, do you think they're overrated? Because I think sonically, as a summation of a whole, I see how you could be like, oh, I fuck with the Clash, but sonically, I think you think they're overrated. And then, do you sonically feel that way about Fugazi?
yeah, like I have less. There's less times where I'm like, oh, I'm gonna throw on this Fugazi record than I am with the Clash. Like the Clash is something I would go to and listen to. Where
All right, well,
Fugazi, I
you,
find,
I guess there is redeemable parts of
yeah,
you.
like and but that being said, like I if film puts on a Fugazi record, it's not gonna like give me the shiver of fuck, I gotta listen to this shit. And in the same way that like 99.9% of the music in this world kind of does in rock pop world. I mean, like I feel when we're talking about any of these bands, Fugazi, The Clash, we are talking to me as a radical, overly obsessed and with this genre, this is the best rock and roll music ever anyway. So it's still in the tippy top percentage of all the records ever made. Like the Clash at their, like we were saying, the Clash at their worst moment is better than I could do at my best moment with the music I make. And same with Fugazi.
Do you think your boy Jonah feels that way? Because
About the Clash and
you told me,
Fugazi? Yeah.
do you think Jonah will admit to even at their worst, they're still more interesting or better than most bands? Or
Oh,
is
yeah.
oh, okay.
Yeah, I
All right.
think so. I like, with that being said, are they more interesting than like Poison Idea for me? Not a chance. Like, come on.
You're a Neanderthal, my friend. And this is from someone who fucks with Poison Idea. I fuck with them heavy, but you're a Neanderthal.
I do find, yeah, it's It's I don't know, like, and I do love the Clash, so this has been a real fun episode for me because I get
Yeah.
it gives me a chance to play heel a little bit and be
I
a
love
dick.
it. I love it.
But there's definitely yeah, that's what I love about, like, that's why I wanted to do the show with you from the very beginning,
Yeah.
is because we have such deep love and respect for this music and
Yeah.
go really deep with our quest to hear it all and to be
Yeah,
exposed to it all.
absolutely. Yeah.
But I think we have different on different perspectives because of different situations we're growing up in, different
Yeah.
backgrounds, and just different relationships with some of these artists that is going to make this show, I think, pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, even to the we've like talked about this before, like maybe it's the West Coast in me and that I'm not I don't I love what New York hardcore represents. I don't know that I'm the biggest New York hardcore fan.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's so funny how, and we were talking about this, I guess, off air earlier with Power Violence and how
Yeah.
different these genres are when they're kind of taken out of their geographical space, and
Yeah.
how it gets taken up differently when it's in other parts of the country. Like Power Violence on the West Coast, it like with the original Power Violence, two words,
Yeah.
there's it was like hard dudes
Yeah.
making hard music, people writing graffiti. Like, this wasn't like nerdy, even though everyone had deep knowledge about shit, but like, this wasn't nerdy record collector
Yeah.
dude world like it was on the East Coast. By the time it showed
Yeah.
up on the East Coast, it was like the nerds that were paying attention to all the stuff that was coming out on Slap-A-Ham,
Yeah.
and I say this in a loving way as a nerd myself.
Yeah.
It was just so different. I feel New York hardcore, not that it's nerdy when it's on the West Coast or anything like that, but it's just different when it's taken out of its context.
Yeah.
I think
Yeah.
it's like, and it's weird because, like, I was talking about it with someone the other day where I don't think it's the lack of vitamin D that we have on the Northeast,
Yeah.
because it's I find it's kind of a similar vibe all the way up the coast where it's less sunny,
Yeah.
but there's like a real bitterness to East Coast vibes and things like that,
Yeah.
and it's
Yeah.
a it shines through in some of the music sometimes, like bitter music made by bitter people.
You know what it is? It's brooding. It's
Yeah,
brooding.
it's
It's
the sense that you can't ever go outside and you're just like stuck inside, like just like
Yeah.
fixating on your shit. Like,
Yeah.
it's like that Prodigy from Mobb Deep solo record where it's like,
Yep.
I sit alone in my tiny ass room,
Yep.
high on drugs, staring at candles. I'm
Yeah.
butchering it there, but
Yeah.
yeah, that's very like the East Coast kind of mentality where
Yeah.
California, you're just like, oh yeah, but there's also like sunshine outside. And not to say there's not issues that people deal
No,
with.
yeah, you're absolutely right. But there is a sense of that. Like there is a sense of like that affects the culture in a different way.
Yeah,
You
it's
know what I
also
mean?
totally.
And the space affects the culture in a different way. Like the fact that like you're able to have garages. Do you know what I mean? Like you're able to fucking have garages. It's almost like the idea of the garages out here is why that shit was a little more melodic out here.
Yeah, and it's I think it's also there's I don't want to say like a pathway to success, but punk, for the most part, it was embraced en masse. I guess also there's such a huge population, so things are bigger no matter what, but there was like these kids were playing shows, like thousands of people would come out to see like some of these early hardcore shows and punk shows and the Olympic Auditorium shows. And
Yeah, those Olympic auditorium shows, yeah, where you'd get like 3,000 fucking kids going crazy.
yeah,
And
and there's
a lot
like,
of it was spectacle too. I mean, like the fact of like, yo, I want to see what this is about.
yeah, let's see the
And
freaks.
let's see the freaks or like, yeah, I heard they want to fight. You would have gang members going to those shows who weren't even into that music.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, I imagine it was a very kind of it's just like a different environment that it's produced. And same way, like, we're talking about, well, I'm talking about that cultural football between England and
Yeah.
America. I find it's also between East and West Coast in punk, where something happens on one coast and then it hits big on the other coast, and it affects and changes the way the music's approached
Yeah.
on the other coast, and then that kind of gets kicked back, and you kind of see that throughout punk history and hardcore history, where
Yeah.
these things are taken up differently on the other side of the country, and then sent back, and then that's kind of taken up differently again on the other side of the country, and then sent back, and
Yeah.
it's.
And that's the clash. I mean, to me, that's like them like picking up shit coming over here. You know, they're a perfect example of that, like ping-ponging and like English dudes' fascination with America, but also at the same time holding on to their Englishness. You know what I mean? Like, there's
Yeah, trying to
that.
find that kind of well, it's like that outsider take where like an outsider's always going to have a different takeaway from the culture they're observing than the people that are living in it,
Yeah.
and that means in like the wrong way too. They're not going to be able to truly understand it, but
Yeah.
there's sort of like this English person's view of America that starts coming
Yeah.
out in the Clash at a certain point.
Yeah. I mean, and they were, I think they were like naively romantic about a lot of things. Like, you know, there's a lot of people, it's like, were, there's a lot of like, probably at the time too, but I know, no, there was like people at the time giving them shit. But like, but even now in hindsight, like, people, there's people who would be like, why did they, Sandinista is like, what would you name it after a leftist guerrilla movement in Nicaragua that you know nothing about or you're not participating in? Like,
Or
and
wearing Red
granted,
Army faction shirts and stuff that were
yeah,
like.
in Italy, they were
Yeah,
the Bergotti Rossi
the
shirt
Brigada. Yeah,
and
they're playing with like heavy political things that they might not truly understand what it's like, especially with the Sandinista stuff, that to actually be there
yeah.
on the ground with stuff sometimes.
But that to me is sort of the is so what I agree, I go, that's also the naiveness of like punk, you know? There's
Yeah.
the naivete of it, you know?
And playing with things you shouldn't necessarily play with, and learning about it as you're kind of
But learning
getting,
about it as you go,
yeah, as you go. I
yeah.
feel like they're like a, obviously a very important band to this scene and this music, but I think just like a very important band in terms of culture in general, because of like what you're saying, that they were a band that tried to retain some sort of political identity the whole way through. And that's another thing that's hard to manage once you're in a band, is like, how do you talk about shit where you're not exploiting the thing that you're talking about
Yeah.
for your own commercial gain, but
Yeah.
you're still just like not talking about nothing and writing a song about like some bullshit relationship for the 10th time.
Yeah, that's exactly it, where it's like you're now at the artist commerce part of your life, where it's like you're also making a living from this. And it's like you live in that weirdness of like, it's like I rather have people talk about it and later regret it or later understand it more, and maybe they were wrong, or than them not to. You know what I mean? Because I go, at least you're bringing attention to something. You know, at least you're kind of bringing attention to something, whether it's like, you know what I mean? I also just think to myself, like, how many people were probably like, new Clash album named Sandinista, what is this? And then they looked it up. Or like for me, I mean, I know what was interesting was like when I having that album, it's like you would the insert had like a illustrative map of like Central America, and like having friends who were from that part of the world, like from El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras and all that, and then just being like, oh, okay, and Nicaragua, like I go, oh, okay, I'm getting the context for the they're singing about a civil war that was going on down that was going on there, that I'm now getting the context for my friends and what brought them here, you know? It's interesting. Yeah.
It is interesting, and I, you know, you bring that up, and I've always, and I'm sure it must be massive, but I'd be really interested to hear about the impact the Clash did have on these various, like, I'm dismissing them as one kind of thing, but like this, all these incredibly different South American punk scenes that exist
Oh
in these different
yeah.
countries,
I
like,
think a lot, man. I think
yeah.
there's a lot of like, I know for one, I can't say I'm like the biggest fan of theirs, but there's like one group, I think they might be out of Mexico called Los Los Fabulosos Cadillacs. They're kind of a very Clash influenced group. There was another band, you might know them, they're called Tijuana No.
I don't think I know him.
Tijuana No, kind of late
Okay.
90s, like kind of ska punk band. You could tell that influence, but I think from that side of the world, like from that part of the world, I think they had a lasting effect. As
Yeah.
much as the Ramones did. Because the Ramones has a huge lasting effect in that part of the world.
Yeah, because I know certainly with Dangerous Rhythms, I wonder if they would have been an influence. And as Dangerous Rhythms, what I would try and attempt the Spanish name, but I would brutalize it. But do you know that band from Mexico City? Yeah, that band, I feel like eventually,
Ritmos
yeah, and
peligrosos.
they eventually start incorporating more sort of traditional Mexican styles of music into their punk as it goes on. It feels like obviously the Clash are doing it with other people's music, but the Clash broadening their sound would have been just like bringing that into punk that you could do that and giving a lot of bands permission to kind of explore their own sounds and bring other things into it.
Even with like when people tell me, oh, combat rock sucks, you know what I always go, yeah, I know, I still like it.
Because you're in the cult.
I'm in the cold, man. I'm
It's
like, look,
like
there's 12 songs, five of them are bangers, so I'll tell you that. Know Your Rights, Car Jamming, Should I Stay or Should I Go, Straight to Hell, Sean Flynn, Rock the Casbah, banger. Well, you know what I will say, there's a remix of Rock the Casbah that's even better than the original.
it like more zaniness?
Beautiful zaniness.
I feel like it's also impressive when you go through the Clash's those records and realize like this is like a year apart and
Yeah,
they're
that's
doing
what
all
it's been
this shit.
crazy. I mean, you think of like, what was it from the first album coming out in 77 to Combat Rock coming out in 82, and they're done by that time.
Yep. They have, and every year they're putting out like I guess 81, nothing comes out, but Sandinista, the year before they do London Calling, the year before they do Give Them Enough Rope, and the year before that they do the first the
The
Clash,
first,
right? And
yeah, the Clash, yeah.
it's
And there's a lot of singles that came
yeah.
out in between that time that are non-single albums. There are singles from non-album singles.
And at the same time, they're touring the world and blowing up. So they were a hard-working band to be able to
Yeah.
do that.
In 5 years.
In
Yeah.
5 years to churn that
Yeah.
stuff out. And I guess it's like when you actually go through the Beatles and realize how short their career was and how much stuff they put out and
Yeah.
even Rancid. I know that's
Yeah.
heavily influenced by the Clash. The first three Rancid records, which have like 1,000 songs between them, or maybe it's the first four.
Yeah.
It's like one a year they're doing that.
Which is funny because people will always kind of say, I think a lot of like highbrow music critics when Rancid came out, I don't think they knew how to contextualize them. So they just went, oh, Clash. But if you listen to all that shit is more like Cock Sparrow than anything. And it's more like UK subs and like Anti-Nowhere League and like it's more in common with that. I know they love the. I know Tim Armstrong loved the Clash, and I know so did Lars. But it's funny that I think rock critics didn't know how to contextualize that, so they thought of them as like, you listen to that first Rancid album, or you listen to Let's Go, and you go, oh, okay, this is like that first Clash album. Yeah, sure, to an extent, but I also think that it had more to do with like, other stuff.
But I think that when the Clash influence starts showing its head is And Now Come the Wolves, where
Yeah.
they've done those first two records, their second record being much more successful than the Clash's second record.
Yeah.
But and then it's like, what do you do for your third record? Like you were saying, like what do you do for your third
Oh, that
record?
you
Like
do Life Won't Wait, which is I think is my favorite Rancid record.
and that's the fourth one. That's their London Call. I guess that's their
Yeah.
Sandinista
Yep.
at that point, right? Like
Yeah.
they're
Yeah.
they. They, but I think that was where the Clash influence is looking at the
Yes, you're
Clash's
right.
playbook
Yeah.
and what
Yeah.
do? You bring in other influences, you start doing
But you know
trick.
what's crazy is after Life Won't Wait, they didn't go down the pipeline. They almost went backwards, which you never see. They put out that hardcore album, the 2000 album, which is like crazy. I mean,
which
it's a
makes
phenomenal, yeah, it's
no,
great,
go on,
but
sorry.
you don't think of it as, it almost feels like reverse in a way.
100%. I feel like that's where the Clash playbook ends, is like you do your Sandinista, which is In Life Won't Wait, and then it's like, where do you go? You've done your huge,
Yeah.
quote unquote, bloated, I guess, but like you've
Yeah.
done your big rock record. And yeah, like I think Rancid did a really smart move by going, the only thing to do is to go back and to kind of
Yeah.
rebuild from the beginning of the DNA, and take in the new influences that you have and apply it to what you did for your earlier records. And
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why they lasted longer. I think you're right.
yeah,
Yeah.
they I think it also comes from the fact that as you go further into this music, you can almost like look at the artists that came before you and like study,
Yes.
not that it's contrived like that, but you know what I'm saying? Like there's like things that even subconsciously you realize as you go on in this music, like, oh, like this guy, these guys did this at this point, so that makes complete sense that we're just going to do this as a band. Like it's still
Yeah.
out there for us to try and to follow. And so you know, they probably looked at the Clash and even subconsciously that was like
Yeah.
dictating kind of the path a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
But this has been, I think we're trying to keep it to an hour, so I think we've already
Yeah.
gone over the hour for this one.
That's all good. We get, I think let's try to stick to that hour. I think we're always going
Yeah.
to go a little over.
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
so too.
Yeah.
But this has been awesome, buddy. I can't
Yeah.
wait for our next agreement or disagreement.
Yeah, same. And yeah, we got some more.
Do you have any, where should people go to find out your dates, your social media and everything?
Oh, they could go at Chris Estrada Comic on Instagram, and then at Chris Estrada 85 on Twitter, and then Chris Estrada Comic on Facebook. And yeah, that's where they can check me out. I have stand-up clips and whatnot. They could watch This Fool on Hulu, all that shit.
And you can find me at Left for Damien on Twitter and Instagram. And Fucked Up is the band I plan, and we're at fuckedup.cc and at Fucked Up on all those platforms. And I guess any last words, Chris?
Class City Rockers for life.